This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content. Listener discretion is advised. Loveline with Dr. Chris starts.
3, 2, 1.
Now.
All right, y'all. Wednesday. Not mad at it. Halfway through the week. Hope you're all having a good week so far. I'm having a really good one. No exceptional reason. And that's what I think I love about it. It's this thing called contentment. It's kind of foreign in our culture. We're always trained to believe that we got to always be thinking about the next thing, the newest thing, the biggest thing. What are you working on? New year, new me. What are your goals? It's exhausting, right? We're so obsessed with productivity, productivity, productivity. Contentment is a powerful thing. I actually learned it from my older brother. I was talking to him about all the things I'm working on. He's like, what about just being content? And I thought, what a foreign concept to actually say, all's enough. Don't need to buy anything else. Don't need to do anything more than I'm doing. Just kind of being present to what is already and letting that be it. And I was kind of like, that is so foreign. You know, the American work ethic is one of more, faster, better, improving. It's exhausting. So sit with that for a second. What would contentment look for you? How would that feel? It's not a bad thing. All right, we got a great show planned for you. We got Dr. D. Jaffe joining us later tonight. I always love sitting down and talking with him. Talk about a smarty pants. We're going to be talking about sober curious. It's an interesting thing. It's kind of getting bounced around a lot. I see it on social media. Basically, it's people that don't have a quote-unquote problem or addiction with drugs and alcohol, but are curious what it would be like to have periods of sobriety or to stop drinking or using drugs or to change their relationship to it. And they're, you know, doing, you know, sober January or just kind of things like that. And they're kind of, you know, seeing how that feels. So we're going to be talking about what that means and also a little celebrity rehab. But as I was teasing for tonight's show, let's talk about sleep divorce. What? Yeah. Well, we talk about how Goopy got us the whole living together while apart, and a couple other celebrities came out saying, yo, we don't live together. People that were married or dating aren't necessarily cohabitating, and they're talking about how it works for them. Well, sleep divorce, I don't really like that term. It's kind of punchy, but basically what it means is couples that realize sharing a bed or a room isn't working for them. And again, we have these normal developmental milestones that we expect if you're happy, healthy, in love, that you do get married and you do live together and you do share a room and you do share a bed. But it doesn't always mean it's the right thing or the healthy thing. And it's really scary to step outside of that and to do what works for you. And so I appreciate that for some couples to say living together, it's going to be hard to explain that, or we don't share room or bed, but you got to do what you got to do. So sleep divorce, which again, I think is a horrible term. There's so much loaded in the word divorce, but it's couples that choose to have separate beds or separate rooms. And that's for a multitude of reasons. Someone sleeps light. I'm a light sleeper. Or someone hogs the blanket. I mean, work through that one, please. But people go to bed at different times. People have temperature issues. They might have a partner that snores. They're a light sleeper. A multitude of reasons. So it's not always something that's necessarily bad or negative. So we don't want to get really upset if a partner approaches us saying, look, I don't think sharing a room or sharing a bed is the most ideal thing for me. Now, are there benefits to sharing a bed? Of course. Sleeping next to someone can be the release of some of the most powerful bonding neurochemicals we have. And it requires a lot of feeling of safety to be able to sleep fully and soundly while there's a new body next to you. And that's why some individuals in early relationship don't sleep well. Well, there's an evolutionary safety reason built into that. You're not supposed to let your guard down and just sleep soundly with some strange body next to you. So it takes time and familiarity, but more importantly, consistency to be able to sleep well with some stranger next to us. They have to no longer be strange. But also, you know, touching for some people, and for some couples, sleeping in the same bed or the same room is the only time, because their schedules are so busy that they actually come together, and that is their only, you know, intimacy time. And that might be the only time they have for when sex can occur. And so for them, it might be really important to share a bed, but for others, not so much. they have affection and sexuality that occurs at other times in the day, you know? And so sleeping in their bed isn't their only time where there's that level of intimacy, connection, and touch. For some couples, though, it is. And so you got to kind of factor that in. But more importantly, just know that there's no right way to run your, you know, sleeping or cohabitation, and that for everyone, it might kind of look and feel a little different, and there's nothing wrong with that. Other news I think is really fascinating. Department of Transportation might start having airlines ban emotional support animals. Yup. No longer will you possibly see peacocks and apparently horses. I was cracking up reading that because they basically said, this is a true statement, they eliminated miniature horses as service animals. Well, they said it's not as flexible as a dog and it doesn't really fit our space requirements. So they're going to be banning that. Not necessarily a bad thing. It's going to make it harder for those that really need it. We'll keep our eye on that one. All right, coming up next, Dr. D. Jaffe. Stick around. Listening to Love Line with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Love Line. We'll be right back. Love Line.
Love Line.
With Dr. Chris.
On Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And now it's time for a little addiction talk. We got Dr. D. Jaffe with us. What's going on, man? How are you?
I am having a great day, man. How about you?
I'm not doing too bad myself.
Good. Are you not sick anymore?
I'm not sick anymore. All better.
That's awesome.
Yeah, all better. We're going to try to keep it that way. I think the key is I have to wash my hands more.
Okay. Yeah. I love it. I heard that works.
Yeah, I'm not mad at it. Clean hands. Keep you healthy. So tonight's question is something that came up in my office this week, but it also actually came up more so in some of my social circles. So there's a word that's going around, a concept, and it's called sober curious. And
yes.
People that are not necessarily struggling, aka with a drug or alcohol problem, but are people that want to kind of think about and explore what would life be like without, you know, alcohol in their life. So the bigger question I wanted you to discuss with me is, people that have taken a break from alcohol and they're debating whether or not they should return to drinking, what might one want to consider? And also the larger question of what, for individuals like that, what would a definition of healthy use of alcohol or drugs look like?
Ooh, I love this conversation.
Perfect.
Okay. So I like the sober curious movement. It's been gaining steam over the last couple of years. One of my good friends, actually, Ruby Warrington, who we had on our podcast, wrote the book Sober Curious.
Awesome.
She didn't make up the term, but she used the term having kind of gathered it from society. It centers on that question that you asked. What would my life be like without alcohol? Not necessarily for people who are struggling and are asking even the question, am I, you know, I hate this term, but I'm going to use it, am I an alcoholic? But rather, they want it for health reasons. They want to lose weight. Maybe they are feeling like they're kind of heading in the direction of drinking more and losing control over it. So the idea behind Sober Curious is exactly as you mentioned. That is, what would it be like to not drink? Here's the thing that I love about it. For so many people who come in to even see me around addiction, their first thing is, I don't want to stop drinking forever. You know, this idea of Sober Curious, we used in the industry, I don't know, 10 years ago, we used to call it abstinence sampling.
Okay.
The idea was, what would it be like to not drink for a week or 2 days or a month, whatever? So here's the reality about alcohol. It is a chemical that interferes with regular bodily function, right? I mean, the dose matters, the way you take it in matters.
And that's hard for some people to hear. Yeah, oh, 100%, 100%. Like, even it drinking in the most controlled, quote-unquote, whatever healthiest version, yes, it's still not necessarily the best thing for your body.
Yeah, like, look, when alcohol first came in and they were using it in the battlefields to help people go through surgery, et cetera, and as a disinfectant, it was good for medicine. But that was a long time ago. We've got better medicine now. And the idea of using alcohol as a medicine is probably not relevant anymore. Now, by the way, I'm taking January off, but I'm going to be going to Arizona tomorrow and probably breaking my dryuary because I'm going to a friend's bachelor party. But I'm not saying that you have to stop drinking, but here's what I love about the movement. We should all be wary of things that we feel like we're doing without any intention behind them. Mm-hmm. Things that we're doing just because we've always done them that way and we're used to it. And when that comes to alcohol, there are two specific elements that I think really come into focus around the sober curious movement. One of them, if you just drink because the people around you are drinking and you just don't want to stick out, I think that's worth looking at. Mm. Right? if you're just kind of like trying to not rock the boat, that's something that could be important. That might be telling me something about your level of comfort in your social settings, et cetera. And then the other big one is if you're drinking to deal with aspects of your life. And again, forget the alcoholism kind of notion. Just like if you're one of those people who, when you come home from work, you've had such a stressful day that you need a couple of drinks just to like sink in, it's a good idea to take a break. And the reason in both of those situations, it's a good idea to take a little break even, is you're going to learn a lot about yourself, your life, your social circle, your motivations, your habits, by even taking a week off, let alone a whole month off. And so that's the part I like about the Sober Curious movement, is it gives people that insight.
Because I also like that none of what you said necessarily villainizes alcohol. It's just about looking at what transformation or insight can be gathered from taking a moment away and focusing on.
Absolutely. Right. I don't know if this needs to enter into this conversation, but one of the things I don't like about the Sober Curious movement, and not everybody's doing it, but more and more people are doing it, is they do exactly what you just said. They make alcohol the villain. Alcohol is really terrible for you. Once you understand that that is true, you won't want to drink anymore. The problem is that for some people that works, but for other people, they look at it, they know alcohol is not great for them, and they're still having a hard time drinking less. And in my opinion, that creates shame in the people who are struggling with that. So I get why people like drinking. In some contexts, I like drinking. But that's why I take a month off every beginning of the year, and actually probably do it once or twice at other times throughout the year, is I like to check in with myself. And what I found for a lot of my clients is they're now drinking out of habit. So you ask the question, what do you do? Let's say you took a break, like you are taking January off or part of January off, and you want to reintegrate. Here's the thing that I think it's important. I call this mindful drinking.
Okay.
When you haven't had alcohol in your life for a while, if you're going to reintegrate it into your life somehow, take a moment, right? You haven't had it for a minute. Your body or your liver has gotten used to not having to, you know, break down and metabolize alcohol. Your brain has gotten used to either the lifting of the fog or whatever you want to call it in terms of, you know, not having to recover from having alcohol in your system. When you first consume it again, pay attention. What does it taste like? What does it make me feel like? What aspects of that do I like and which do I not? What I notice is that when you don't drink mindlessly, but you drink mindfully, you end up finding yourself very gradually in reintroducing it back. It's not one of those things where you go back from no drinking at all to the levels you drank at before, but rather you start drinking at much lower levels. You start being affected by it more because you're paying attention to the impact, which in turn moderates to some extent and reduces the negative physiological impact, the physical issues that can come about when you drink too much.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking more with Dr. Dee Jaffe about Sober Curious. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and tonight we're talking with Dr. Dee Jaffe about this new concept called Sober Curious. So if you had to, and this is like I'm asking a really big question that I want you to put into like a bite-sized answer, but if you had to give a layperson's definition for someone who isn't necessarily struggling, whatever that means, but is looking at the role alcohol drugs play in their life, if they said, however, I still want to have a definition, a working definition, a loose definition for healthy alcohol use, what would you arm them with? What would you provide?
Great. Look, first I'll give you the World Health Organization or the NIAAA standards. For a woman, that's about 7 drinks a week. For a man, it's 14, although the number for women on average is edging up a little bit over the last decade or two. That averages out to no more than 2 drinks a day for a man, no more than 1 per day for a woman. Now, to be clear, if you have 1 per day for a woman or 2 for a man, that is pushing you very close to the edge of what's called heavy drinking.
Okay.
So that's the maximum. That's not what you're supposed to be drinking for responsible, kind of non-problematic drinking. Here's what I found, though, in practice with a lot of the people that I work with, and that is non-daily drinking, so not drinking every single day, not consuming alcohol every day, and traditionally not having more than 2 or 3 drinks in a sitting, right? And when I'm talking drinks, and this is probably the most important part of what we're going to talk about here, we're talking about a standard drink. Think a single shot, like 1.5 ounces of hard alcohol, a 12-ounce 5% beer, you know, a 5-ounce pour of wine. Those are a drink.
Okay, and that's powerful what you just said, because when I pour wine, I fill the glass up. Dead serious. Yeah, that's a drink
to me. I get it.
Yeah.
No, I think most people do. And here, that's still okay. Just recognize you're having 2.5-3 glasses of wine.
Oof. Yeah, that's powerful.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, just count it.
Yeah.
And here's, you know, look, I'm, again, I can't say it, but my F shame bracelet on my wrist is all about non-judgment.
Right.
So, Alan Marlett, who's a harm reduction expert.
Love his work. Expert, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. University of Washington. One of the biggest, my favorite studies that he did was just letting students know how much they were drinking in actual quantity standard drinks, and letting them know what the actual norms were for students around them. Reduce people's drinking. Just being realistic about what you're consuming is probably going to help you drink a little bit less already. I think, like I said, that's probably the most important message. Here's the thing, don't drink like whoever drinks Long Island iced tea, but don't drink a Long Island iced tea and say, well, I just had a drink. That's like four. And just be realistic.
And I love that. Realistic. It's not about shaming yourself. It's not. Yeah, I love that. I love that. Just be honest with yourself so you can actually track what's happening. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. I love that because it's such a fascinating thing. And, you know, part of this segment is just trying to provide people with options outside the going standard, because what happens with some of the clients I've worked with that are trying to be sober curious is they wind up sometimes ending up in 12-step programs, and that's not going to address necessarily the journey that they're looking to be on. And so,
Here's the thing, you know, somebody just today was saying, like, why do you have to bash AA? And I'm like, I'm not bashing AA at all, but if you walk into an AA meeting, they're going to tell you you're an alcoholic.
Right.
Because that's the orientation. That's the perspective that they're coming from. Okay. But if what you're looking at is, hey, what role is alcohol playing in my life? That's why I think this movement is so great. There are people who 10 years ago were trying to figure out what to do with their drinking, but didn't see an option other than an AA meeting. So they never walked in. And so they didn't deal with inner issues. They didn't understand what was going on with their drinking, and maybe things got worse. Having this idea of, well, let me just take 3 days off. Let me take a week off. What do I feel like? I think that's a big value for a lot of people.
I appreciate that. Producer Emmy actually has a question for you.
I do.
Yes.
Do you think putting a label on temporary sobriety, like, oh, I'm going to go sober for this amount of time, puts an extra amount of pressure on a person and might sort of cause someone to give up earlier than they would have if they just like consciously stopped drinking, like how you see with diets when people are like, oh, I'm on this diet, but like because they're like putting such like a strict label on it and stuff, it's like they're more likely to sort of like break their diet rather than follow like intuitive eating. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it absolutely makes sense. And I think you're on the right path. Here's the thing. Just like with dieting, when we set ourselves into expectations, I'm going to only eat this much, only during these times, I'm not going to drink at all, let's say during the month of January. What ends up happening internally is if you step away from that expectation, even in a small degree, right? Like even like you're supposed to only have 1800 calories a day and you find yourself having 1900, there's this break. In the context of addiction treatment, we call it the abstinence violation syndrome. The idea is I said I was not going to drink anything and I had a half a glass of wine. I've already broken the abstinence. Why keep going? That's what you're talking about,
yeah.
Right?
So you say, screw it all. I'm off and running now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the most damaging components to the idea and this is not true of Sober Curious. As far as I know, most of the people that I look at in Sober Curious, but for traditional recovery is, you know, your only measure of success is how many days sober you have.
Yep.
And so it's actually kind of true to some extent in a very limited way of looking at it. If you had 397 days and you drank, then now you have 0 days. And that manner of thinking does fall into this idea of, well, if I'm only going to start from day one again, that's nothing. I might as well start next week.
That's right. If I got a big old zero, I'm going to hang in there with that for a while and just do my thing. Dr. D. Jaffe, where can people find you?
DJaffe.com, ADIJAFFE.com is probably the easiest way. And like I said before, if you feel brave, ignited.com is my podcast with my wife and where I do a lot of my work. And that's IGNTD.com.
If you dare. Awesome. Thanks so much, man. Have an awesome night.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Have a great one.
Bye-bye. Coming up next, we're going to be sliding into those DMs. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back. And now it's time to slide into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to sport confidence. Heads up, the DMs come from our Loveline IG page. So if you got a question for us, slide into the Loveline IG page DMs. We will answer it on air, or sometimes go over to my Dr. Donahue IG page and you can hit me up there. All right, here we go. Dear Dr. Chris, I've been dating someone for 2 months and things have been going well, so I thought it was time to have the defining the relationship chat. In asking the guy that I'm dating what he's looking for, he said that he's interested in us not having sex with other people, but doesn't want to be my boyfriend. I'm confused as to what this means. What should I do and how should I wrap my head around this? Oh, yeah, this is interesting, actually. This has come into my office before, and I actually had a friend struggling with this one as well. What people often mean when they say that, that they don't want to be your boyfriend or girlfriend, but they don't want you kind of having sex with other people, et cetera, is that they want to not be made anxious or feel threatened, but they also don't want any accountability or responsibility for you on any grand emotional level. I think it's kind of an unfair dichotomy, right? If someone doesn't want your boyfriend or girlfriend, again, they're implying, I want casualness. I don't want to have to necessarily prioritize you or the relationship. I don't want to necessarily have to have a lot of responsibility for this. But then for them to say, after saying that, but I also don't really want you out there dating other people, having sex with other people, that's an odd bind and that's an odd request, because for a lot of people, it's the boyfriend and girlfriend label and the accountability and responsibility and care that comes with that that will make them be willing to give their monogamy, their sexuality to an individual. So if they don't want you having sex with dating other people, it's because they don't want to necessarily have to deal with the anxiety or fear that comes up around that. But again, it's interesting that they don't want any other levels of responsibility or accountability. So what do you want? What feels good for you? Because I'm hearing in the question that you don't feel okay about all that. So you have a right to set your definition. Remember, you don't have to necessarily operate from the desire needs of other people. I want to know where you are in that. Step into your power. If you're someone who's saying, well, I do want that level of responsibility, accountability, and prioritization, then you have to say to them, that's what I'm looking for. And if that's not what you're looking for, then this is not compatibility or tolerable for me. And also, how do you feel about monogamy? Related or unrelated to being their boyfriend or girlfriend. So I kind of want to hear more of you in this. It's not what's right for them or is it okay? People can ask for whatever they want. I want to hear from you. What do you need? What do you want? And so build that back in. So make this more of a discussion. I'd also want you to ask them, what does that mean to you? What does boyfriend or girlfriend mean to you? And based on that meaning, you'll then understand what it is they're not wanting in their life or what they're avoiding. So have a further conversation around that. I think that's really important. Look, I love questions like this because these are the moments in a relationship where you really learn how a person feels about you and what they're looking for, you know, and a lot of really beautiful data can come out of it. So maybe it's an ongoing conversation. Also remember that not all these things are solved in one sitting. And maybe this is something you guys keep as a workshop, you're workshopping, constantly coming back to it and talking it out. Not everything's, you know, handled right away, but a lot to learn in this one. So glad you asked the question, focus more on what you're looking for and kind of take it from there, you know? All right, Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sexy world. We want you to explore with confidence. Our show is podcasted. Go to wearechannelq.com. All the old episodes are there. You can post them, share them, binge, check them out. And also we post some of the articles up there around the topics we talk about, so you can find out more information. So wearechannelq.com is your place to find all that. And as I said, DMs, they're on our IG pages. So slide on in there. We'll ask your question on air. Y'all have been really awesome about that. All right, coming up next, we're going to be talking with Jared Hill from Drop the Subject about hookup culture. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for a little chit chat.
Yeah. Smarter than you.
No, what I say is right. No. What I think is right.
Yeah, you know what? I know everything.
Coffee talk. So we got Jared Hill from Drop the Subject with what's going on, Jared.
Hey, Boo.
So let's get into it. Let's go there. Let's go there. I just had made this like really passing comment on my IG, and I said, you know, I've taken a break from hookup culture and I've learned a lot. And I didn't realize how vague that was. So a couple people slid into my DMs and they're like, we're really curious. We'd love to hear more around what are the kinds of things that you've learned. So before we even unpack that, I want to ask you that. Have you ever taken a conscious break from hookup culture and app culture and just said, I'm just going to kind of live in the world? Have you done that before?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are times when it's just like being on apps is a little bit overwhelming and you feel like, I just don't feel like interacting and like halfway meeting someone and, you know, being disappointed or excited and like going through the whole range of emotions. It's like, I need a break. So I've definitely done that many times.
Okay. And did anything profound come out of it other than just less stress, anxiety, and chaos? Did you learn anything?
For me, it's usually just been kind of I felt more at ease and like more calm. And then at some point you're like, okay, let's go back. Or like, let's give it another shot.
What came up where you're like, it is now time to go back? Just loneliness, boredom, horniness?
I was going to say, it's usually a range of either like you get horny or you're like, I feel like I could entertain someone else being in my life again or something like that. It's usually somewhere between those two things.
I've had it be more ego-based where there's times where I was like, I need my desirability reflected back to me. Like, I need to be reminded that I'm an attractive sexual being in the world. And then go back on from that place. That's there too sometimes.
I can see that. Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
So, what did you learn? What was your profound revelation?
Yeah, well, it was really interesting to have to qualify or quantify it, because it was just kind of like an embodied experience where I just felt more relaxed. That's kind of the word you used. But when I really had to put it into words, I kind of learned a lot. And I don't know if it's learned a lot as much as, and I just feel a lot and I feel a lot differently, but a couple things. First off, I started to have more body confidence because I was getting too comfortable and familiar with people dissecting me and me dissecting myself based on people's like questions about, well, how tall are you? How much you weigh? Do you have any shirtless pics? And all these different things where I was getting a little too familiar with that level of objectification, which there's a place for it, but I didn't like my comfort with it. And I didn't realize how comfortable and familiar I was getting with it until I was out of it.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So there's like,
how long did it take for you to get to that spot?
I would say, no lie, a couple days away from it, I started to notice that I wasn't paying attention to my body, and that felt great. Whereas when I was on the dating apps for sex or dating, because, you know, a lot of them are a little bit of both, that I was a little too hyper aware of my body. Like, what is it looking like? How am I stacking up in terms of all the different ways a body can look? And I didn't like the consciousness that I was being forced into.
I totally get that. I think because normally when you're on an app, especially if you're on a hookup app and not like a dating app, which again, they do kind of run the gamut there. When you're on a hookup app, you have to be much more conscious. Like, could I actually hook up with someone today? Like, would I feel good about like inviting someone over? No, I just had a whole plate of nachos. Not tonight. You know what I mean? Like, it depends on how you're feeling about yourself in those moments. So I totally get that.
Yeah. And I also, and again, this is in no way to shame hookup culture. I think it's a really powerful developmental place and fun, exciting place. And it can lead to long-term beautiful relationship and intimacy building. But I was wanting to just really understand my experience. And one of the other things that came out of it all is taking a break from it also helped me realize that what a lot of other people do is they'll collapse emotions, meaning confusing horniness with boredom or loneliness. And I was starting to realize that like there's a lot of specificity in that where I wasn't really being able to deal with some of my loneliness or boredom because I was just attributing that to horniness and I would maybe hook up or go on a date and that wasn't actually what I was needing or seeking and I wasn't able to identify that. And now I'm sitting with like my emotions and so they're feeling a little more amplified. It's beautiful.
I love that. I feel like I'm kind of in this spot right now where I'm like, I just want to take like a break from like dating and like not necessarily like intimacy if that like comes along, but like I don't want to like be responsible for someone else's feelings and like how to respond to them and like all that. I kind of want to just like have a moment with myself. I'm making like some significant life changes over the next, you know, few weeks and things like that, and it's really important to me to just be able to sit in what I'm feeling and like, and, you know, and explore that and really be able to embrace it and appreciate it. So I'm kind of in that spot right now where like my profile is down from Tinder, and I'm not really like logging into other apps and stuff like that. I think there is something that is like recharging about it, to being able to like spending some time with yourself. It's kind of like getting off social media does the same thing. It's a similar kind of recharge feeling.
But I love that, because I think there's something really healthy and mature in someone saying, and it sounds maybe problematic to some people, but I think it's healthy and mature to say, to engage other people sexually, romantically, even in a casual sense, is to have to take some kind of accountability or responsibility for someone else. And like, I don't want to. I want my energy to go towards my own things only. That's so healthy. I love that you can see
that. Yeah, I think it costs something, right, to be in a relationship. And I don't mean that monetarily, even though it does cost there. But like, it costs your time, it costs your energy, it costs your mental capacity, and like having to wonder, like, what is this person feeling? You know, and trusting that what they're saying is what they're feeling and it's not something else, and analyzing that. And like, you know, all of us have like our different neuroses and the ways that we interact with someone else in a relationship, and like not having to do all of that for a little while and being able to just kind of like sit in my own stuff and like be able to like really just be in my mind about how am I feeling? How am I engaging people? How am I, you know, moving about the world? How am I making decisions? And am I happy here? Am I all those different things, and not having to take into account like my partner. Sometimes it's a nice bit of relief to have.
And I want to just like close on a little gem for people to take away. If people are listening to what you literally just said and they're saying, oh wow, I don't relate to that, like I'm out there and I'm dating and I don't feel like I have to take responsibility for someone or consider them or think about them, I want them to stop and go, uh-oh, that's not a good sign. Because if you are out there hooking up and dating casually or seriously, it should feel like there's that cost. I want people to have more care and compassion for how they're impacting people. So like if no one's understanding what you're saying, I want them to stop and check themselves, because it should feel
If you're in a relationship with someone and like it doesn't have some kind of like emotional cost, which is not always negative, right? Like sometimes that cost is really, really great.
That's right.
Like if you're just in it and there's nothing that it requires of you, you're probably not with the person that you're with is probably not happy with this relationship. If you're not like checking in with them and seeing how they are, and you know, being able to take some of that on, like that's a part of a relationship. And if you're not feeling that, you're probably not a good partner.
Jared Hill, where can people find you?
People can find me every day right here on Channel Q from 10 to 2 Pacific time with Drop the Subject with Jared and Allie. And you can also find me in our political specials that will be starting back next month, and everywhere at Jared Hill.
Awesome. Love that, man. Coming up next, Celebrity Rehab. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time for a little Celebrity Rehab.
Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Chris.
So, of course, we've got Loveline's pop culture guru, Nick Moore, with us. Nick, how are you?
What's up? I was just listening to your previous segment about sleeping in the same bed.
Ah, what came up for you? Anything?
I mean, I think that sleeping in the same bed is so personal, and like, it really, you really absorb your partner's energy when you sleep. So it is really intimate for me.
Yeah, for me as well. I'm one of those people, much like yourself, and I think this is what we have a lot in common around, is I like a lot of closeness and a lot of intimacy and a lot of touch and a lot of affection. And so not only do I want to co-sleep, I want them like hanging on me like a backpack as often as possible.
You know, Dr. Chris, birds of a feather flock together. That is why we are friends.
Like, I literally say that. I'm like, I date backpack style. Like, please always be there. So I appreciate that.
Never stop touching me.
That's right. Please be touching me at all times. But that's how we are. You know what I mean? That's what we do. So exactly. What do you got for us tonight?
All right. I have been dying to talk to somebody about this, because the internet has been going insane over this whole Brad Pitt, Jen Aniston, are they back together? Are they going to reunite? What's going on? We saw them touching in the awards show. Then we saw Brad watching Jen accept her SAG Awards speech this past weekend. And so everybody is so team Brad and Jen getting back together. But I think we're forgetting that Brad cheated on Jennifer Aniston with Angelina Jolie. So what is wrong with society? Why are we forgiving of this man who cheated on the Hollywood, like, princess? with Angelina Jolie. He can't even see his kids because he has alcohol problems. And yet we're still wanting this girl to get back with Brad Pitt.
I think because some of, I mean, before I even like truly answer, I think because we idealized the two of them together. You know what I mean? They were like Hollywood's sweethearts for a while, right? And we just like love that reboot. We're all about the reboot right now.
I know, but what in our right mind think that it's okay for a guy who publicly humiliated her like that for her to get back with him? Like, why are we making the exception here?
Bam. Beautiful. We'll end the question there.
I like have been dying to like ask this question. Like, what is, because I even find myself like, oh, you know, I love them together. They're so beautiful together. They're so amazing together. But then I remember that he did her so dirty.
Yeah, I wasn't. Can you give me a quick bullet point as to what he did? He cheated on her. It was made public, and that's the dirty?
He was married to Jennifer Aniston.
Right.
He went and filmed Mr. and Mrs. Smith with Angelina Jolie, and then cheated on her during the filming of Mr. and Mrs. Smith, left Jen for Angelina.
Got it. That's what I thought it was. Yeah. I do.
And then Angelina
that.
Divorced his ass because he has like an alcohol problem and he like cannot see his kids or something.
Okay. Got it. All right. Thank you so much. Yeah, this is really powerful. What's so interesting though is again, there's so much idealization and romanticization in this, meaning we sometimes get really comfortable with the idea of two people together. And as a result of that, we're willing to forgive a lot of things. And that can be beneficial, but it can also be really negative, right? Because some people are consistently not worthy of trust. And that is not someone who we want to let off the hook because we idealize the idea of that person with someone else. That's a bad example of that. It's a positive example if the person who's cheated has acknowledged they cheated, apologized, discussed what that was about, has taken accountability, and can make us feel secure that that's something that they wouldn't exercise as a solution again in the future, right? Because there are some people that just aren't worthy of trust. And then there's others who made a mistake and they're willing to take accountability for that. And we have to kind of allow that change process. That's what I do, you know, as a therapist in my office, is I work with people who really are dedicated to being better and want to have a more positive impact on those around them. And so I'm here for that piece. But I think in this example, you know, I saw some of the photos. I saw one photo where he was grabbing her arm. It looked like she was trying to get away. It seemed as though she's not feeling comfortable or safe maybe, but is able to reminisce around what they had and maybe mourn that a little bit. But it sounds like he's definitely trying to kind of say, hey, I'm here. I'm a different person. Like, you know, still thinking about you. Let's try it again. So it's a really difficult position to be in because, you know, even though someone might have really wounded us, it can be easy sometimes for us to slide back into really romanticizing what it was like when we were with them and wondering what it might be like again. It also depends often what's going on in our lives. If we're in a really secure place where our self-esteem is high because we love our job and we're working and we love what we're doing and we're feeling maybe very desirable and dateable in the world because there's other people asking us out or whatever it is, that's going to be a better, more empowered position for us to encounter an ex like that. And we'll maybe be able to, you know, have a better boundary. But if someone's in the opposite place where they're not really feeling great or secure, they might not necessarily make the best decisions for themselves. So I guess the question for me is, what's going on in Jen's life? How's she feeling? I know she has a new show on, and I hope she's going to set the boundaries she needs to set and take care of herself. Because it sounds like Brad's got some work to do. It sounds like he has to clean up his current family, his relationship with his children, look at his relationship to alcohol. It might not be the time for him to be someone's partner, right? Because when we're dating someone, we bring in to their life all of our baggage, and you want to make sure that you've kind of worked through that. You want to be good for someone, right? Like, dating readiness should be the question, what will I bring into someone's life? What kind of impact will I have on someone else? Will it be positive? Will it be negative? So anyway, we'll talk more about this. I think this is really great. Question of the night. It's up on our Loveline IG page. You're listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new Channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.
All right, we're back and it's time for question of the night.
Question of the night.
All right, so its question is, how do you feel about a partner's interest in your work life? I think this is interesting. This is not something we talk about a lot, but I think that there's something really fascinating that, you know, we talk a lot about boundaries and what parts of ourselves we want people to relate to us from and what we want them to ask us. And it's interesting. I was talking to someone recently and I was saying to them, you know, I started dating someone. I'd taken a little bit of a break, but I'm seeing someone. And I was saying, you know, what's really great is we have absolutely nothing in common. And my friend was laughing. I was like, wait a minute, why does that not sound great? And I was like, yeah, I know. We have this grand narrative that, you know, you have that stuff in common. I said, we don't. And that's actually what's really stunning is there's so much that we both learn because we live our lives very, very differently. And it's exciting because we don't know much about the other person's work or their lifestyle because it's so different. And that I love learning. So I love getting to be brought into different parts of the world that I hadn't prior. And this new relationship has been able to do that for me. So I find that stunning. So the two of us very much value being brought into each other's work life, but from a position of not knowing. And so the way we engage it is just one from a place of curiosity, right? There's no competition. There's nothing threatening. And there's interest and curiosity because it's so unfamiliar. What we do have in common, I think, are things that aren't very tangible and not the obvious ones. It's not like the kind of work we do or the kinds of films we like or things like that. It's quite different on that level as well. But we find the newness in each other fascinating, right? Like they're not vegan, I am. And so they're constantly getting to find new forms of cuisine and new restaurants. So anyway, question of the night from y'all is, how do you feel about your partner's interest in your work life? Let's see what y'all said. Y'all had a lot to say. I love this. First person said, it's important that they support me in my goals and they're open to hearing about the stresses, and I do the same with them. 100% agree with that, right? You want someone that you can come home and they value what you've done with your time all day, right? Or other things you might be putting time and energy into work-wise on the weekends or whatnot. And you want to be able to share your stresses and you want them to value the things that you're stressed about, right? You want them to find value in the work that is leading to that stress. Otherwise, that's going to be really hard to come home to. Someone else said, what work life? I'm a stay-at-home mom and proud. Bam. I love that. You do a lot of work. There's a lot of emotional labor in that. A lot of soul labor, a lot of psychological labor, such powerful, beautiful stuff. Thank you for that answer. Someone else said, when it's too much, it just comes off as insecure. It makes me feel like they're trying too hard to find out if I'm doing anything flirty or bad at work. I get that. Where the questions seem a little targeted, but not targeted about curiosity or learning more about what you're doing at work as much as who you're around, maybe. Yeah, that's definitely going to feel intense. Question of the night is, how do you feel about your partner's interest in your work life? Someone said, I'm a yoga teacher and my girlfriend comes to my classes all the time, and I love that I can include her in my life, in my work life and space. That's beautiful. I love that. I think if I was dating someone who did yoga or something like that, I'd probably want to try to get in on that as well, because it's a beautiful way to maybe spend time with them, get to know more about them, draw some connections, but also just get some yoga. Just get some free yoga. I'm not mad at that. Other people's thoughts about your partner's interest in your work life. Someone said, I would want them to ask about my work life, but not be too overbearing to the point where they need to know every detail. Agreed. You just kind of left work. You might not want to necessarily enter back into it. And all that comes up when you're talking about work deeply, especially if it's a little stressful. Some people want to come home and kind of divorce themselves from that, compartmentalize it, and go from work person to, you know, romantic relational person. And they just want to kind of occupy that space. Totally respect that. Other people's thoughts about question night. Tonight's question is I don't even know the question is. How do you feel about your partner's interest in your work life? Someone said, I don't care. I'm more of a private person. So if they aren't interested in my work life, I'm definitely okay with that. I get it. Totally respect that. Someone else said, it can go either way. It's weird if their interest is either too high or too low. Yeah, I feel you on that. I've gone on dates with people or been in relationships where they don't ask, and it's as though that part of me doesn't exist for them. And for me, it's a meaningful part. My work isn't my work, or my work is work that you put in quotes. It's my activism. It's my passion. It's my art. It all swirls together. And so someone not asking me personally about my work is them missing out on deeper, more important parts of me and what I value, and I have passion for it. And so that's how they really learn about me. So that would kind of let me down as well. Although that comes up as with friends too, right? Friends where they're like, oh, I've never read your book or listened to your radio show. And I'm like, okay, well, those are important parts of me. It'd be cool if you engage those or got to know me on that level. But anywho, I digress. Someone else said, I think it shows genuine interest when someone takes interest in my work. If someone didn't care about my work, I would not take it offensively, but as a sign that they aren't really interested in me as a whole. Yep. You just kind of put in words what I just said as well. I agree with that for me as well. Yeah, I want them to want to know that part of me and find that of interest. Someone else said, I love it. We're in the separate industries, so the fact he makes an effort to learn is sweet. Agreed. I'm living that right now. Somebody else said, as long as their interest is only in your happiness and mental health. Bam. Beautiful. Someone else said, I want them interested in my work life. I want them a part of my life. Yep. Swan said, as far as partners' interest in your work life, I think it's important due to being a therapist. It's not just my career, but how I live my life. Yes, I agree, for me as well. It's who I am. It's how I move through the world. It's my values, my ethics, my politics. It's so much bigger than just, quote unquote, my job. So I'm totally with you on that. And finally, someone else said it's important for us to be good listeners about our work life, even if it's just for 5 minutes. And someone else said, if you care about me, I hope you care about all of me, work included. That's how I feel too. Thanks for those who participated. Got to kind of stop there. Coming up next, I'm going to be sliding into those DMs. Listening to Loveline with Dr. Chris on the new channel Q and radio.com.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on channel Q.
All right, we're back, and now it's time to slide back into those DMs.
Sliding into the DMs.
Sliding in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms. It's a big old sex world, and we want you to explore it with confidence. Just a heads up, all the DMs come from our Loveline IG page. So go on there, slide in those DMs, give us your questions. We'll get them on air or at my Dr. Donahue IG page. That's where they come from. Hit us up. All right, tonight's question is, the guy I'm seeing told his ex about us, and apparently it tore her apart. He wants me to give him time to work through things. Why would he need time if he's already in a new relationship? And how long is an appropriate amount of time to give him? So the guy I'm seeing, I'm telling his ex, blah, 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 blah. You know, here's the thing. As people enter new relationships, they have people that are still in their lives as friends, you know, maybe it's an ex, but we enter people's lives already in motion. And I think it's okay that people have a little care and concern for how they're impacting people. Although if you're, you know, newly dating someone and one of their exes is struggling with the idea that the person, you know, you're with is with you, that's hard to hear. It can be very threatening. So, you know, again, we want to be careful how we manage that, because I want all parties involved to be thoughtful about how everyone's feeling, right? Everyone's feelings are legit. So why would he need time if he's already in a new relationship? Because sometimes people have longstanding prior relationships that are still full of love and care, and that doesn't mean they want to be with them romantically or sexually. And that's hard for people to understand, that someone we might have been sexual romantic with at one point, that can absolutely no longer be there in any form, but care and concern still exists. And I think that that's a healthy sign. Like, I think there's something really beautiful in that. And that people just want to make sure everyone feels safe and okay. So I think a lot of this is just about transparency and a lot of dialogue about what that means to help someone work through something, or, you know, just what kind of relationship someone still has with someone who's in their life. Because again, I don't like the idea of policing where we're checking in and setting rules, but I do like the idea of care and transparency where we're just keeping healthy, open adult dialogue going and everyone's aware of what's happening, because that should be the goal, is that we're really having an intimate adult relationship. No one needs to hide who they're still friends with and who they're talking to. And we're all just kind of aware of what's happening. So like that I think should be the gold standard. An appropriate amount of time to give him. I don't know. I don't really know if there's an appropriate amount of time as much as just keep checking in on what feels good and what's working for you. What's the temperature of the relationship? But again, this kind of falls back to something we talk about on Loveline a lot, about friends with exes and, you know, toxic monogamy. And, you know, again, monogamy, great. It's an awesome thing for a lot of people. It becomes toxic, though, when we see everyone and everything as a threat and we want all threats removed, especially when things aren't a threat. And if someone you're in a relationship with is telling you this person's not a threat, and if you can't believe that, well, then we have an even bigger issue, because you're in a relationship with someone who you don't trust. Because if they're telling you this and you can't trust them that it's true, then we have a trust issue. And that should be something you have to deal with first. Are you struggling to trust someone and it's your issue, or is this person not worthy of trust? And then how is it that you're in a relationship in general with them? Because then I wouldn't want you to be able to trust anything else they say. So it's like we have to resolve that part first, because I want us to be with people where when they tell us there's nothing to be afraid of, we can actually believe them. That's the goal. And that's why I'm not a fan of people getting each other's passwords to phones. Like, I want you to say to someone, I'm feeling unsure, let's talk about it. And I want you to believe that they'll be open with you. And I want people to have respect for that. So let's not be so threatened. Let's make the new year one of security. Slide in the DMs is brought to you by our friends at Trojan Condoms, because it's a big old sex world. We want you to explore with confidence. That's our show. Our show is podcasted at wearechannelq.com. It's also where we post some articles so you can follow up on some things we talk about. So wearechannelq.com is your source for all that. We'll be back tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Eastern. As always, thanks for hanging out with me. And y'all have an awesome, awesome night.
Loveline
with Dr. Chris
on Channel Q.